on 98 FM and online. This is Phoenix FM.
Welcome in all listeners, this is the main event you've all been waiting for. Introducing the undefeated, the undisputed best boxing show in the world. Hailing across Essex, East London, Essex, coming to you live from Phoenix 98 FM. Welcome to On The Ropes.
Hello, I'm Carl Frampton and you're listening to On The Ropes with Mark and Charlie Foley.
It's Sunday, it's 8pm, and it's your last fix of sport for the weekend here at Phoenix 98 FM. Lots of boxing action to discuss again this weekend. But before all that, how's your weekend been, Charlie? And a bit of a washout, I must say.
It has been a washout, bro. It's been enjoyable, though. I've got a lot done with the family. Yeah, been all good. It's bank holiday as well. It's standard. It's going to be raining, isn't it? It always is.
Yeah, absolutely. And for anyone that is having a long weekend, I wish you a lovely, relaxing time. Unfortunately, I'll be in work tomorrow, Charlie, after a two-week vacation, I must say.
Ditto. Back to work, no rest for the wicked.
Absolutely. This week, as always, we'll give you our news and views. And in part two, we'll be joined by local lad and Matchroom Boxing CEO Frank Smith for a catch-up. Very much looking forward to that one. Before that, before we get to last night's action with Queensbury Promotions, a few domestic stories of note to mention. Now, Charlie, Conor Benn said this week he hopes to return mid to late October. Now, Chris Jenkins, the British champion at welterweight, is still his target. He said, listen, I'm not afraid of any welterweight in the UK or even in the world. We'll take the right fights at the right time. And when I win this British title, all this lot can get to work. Is he ready, Charlie? I mean, Ben is 16-0. He's ranked number 6 in Britain. You know, a tasty domestic division. We touched on this last week with the likes of Chris Congo now coming through, Josh Kelly, Michael McKinson. I mean, they're all knocking on the door also. Do you think Conor Benn is ready to take that British title from Chris Jenkins?
In short, no. I don't think he's ready, personally, Mark. I don't think he's ready. He's at 16-0. He's had no real amateur. Yes, he's obviously from good stock. You know, his father's Nigel Benn. You know, I mean, to live in the legacy of the family name, yes, you know, it's great that he's doing that. But he's had no real amateur career. You know, you're talking people like Chris Jenkins, you know, good domestic boxer. You know, Chris Congo, Josh Kelly, these guys have, you know, amateurs. They've been at the Olympics. Obviously, Congo just missed out. And McKinson, you know, European title holder, you know, but boxing now seems to be, you get beyond 10 fights and people are looking for titles, you know, without really earning their stripes. I think he should get to 20, you know, 20 plus fights before he even thinks about going down a British title route. He's obviously just calling people out because he thinks he's ready. You know, it's the difference between thinking you're ready and actually being ready, Mark. So I don't know. I do like his style, but it's some of those fights he's been involved in, you know, they've been, you know, real 50-50s, really, with unknown quantities, unknown names. You know, going in with these guys, I'm not sure he's just ready. That's my own personal opinion.
No amateur background at all, Conor Benn. Chris Jenkins has proved he is probably the best in Britain currently. He's very, you know, he's very much unknown, the Welshman. Very, you know, elite, not, I wouldn't say elite, but, you know, a very composed boxer. Good pedigree, good experience. I think, personally, it would be a huge, huge mistake for Conor Benn currently to try and, you know, go and win that British title against Jenkins.
Well, if you look at people, Jenkins' fault, you know, he beat Johnny Garton, didn't he? Took the title of him, Garton, since retired. And obviously, you know, he fought really well that night at the Royal Albert Hall. He's also fought, you know, Paddy Gallagher over in Belfast. You know, he went into the Lions Den at the Fesh Festival over there, you know, West Belfast. He fought a really good fight that night. The only thing with Jenkins, Mark, he cuts very easily. And obviously, Ben can, you know, Conor Benn can hit hard. So, you know, if Ben was to take that fight on and he cut him early, he might have a chance. But Jenkins is slippery. He's smooth. He's a smooth, smooth operator. You know, he works wonders. He's in Wales, isn't he? Who's he trained by? Gary Lockett. You know, you think of Lockett. Lockett was a good middleweight as well. You know, he's got a good stable. So, I don't know, Mark. I don't think, as I said, I think Ben's probably another four or five fights away, for me personally, for being ready for a British title. But he's obviously calling these guys out because everyone's been inactive over COVID-19. And he probably thinks he's ready now to start challenging for titles, because everyone else, you know, let's be honest, within the Matchroom stable in Brentwood, you know, they're all either British title holders or they've been in for a British title. So he probably thinks he's the odd one out. But, you know, he's still got time. He's relatively young. I don't know what the rush is.
Also this week in the domestic scene, Charlie Edwards announced he's moving straight up to bantamweight after vacating his WBC flyweight title, and he's going to face Kyle Williams in his first fight in the division on the undercard of Josh Taylor versus Kong Xiong on September 26th.
Yeah, that'd be a good fight, Mark. I'm really looking forward to that. I mean, we'll probably touch upon last night. Charlie was there, wasn't he, at the BT Studios watching his brother Charlie in those... You know, in those, I don't know what his brother was doing last night with those pigtails on. He looked atrocious. But we can touch upon that. Charlie's, yeah, he's out. It will be a good contest, you know, since I think he had to go up in weight, really, Mark, didn't he? Because he was certainly suffering at that weight. So be interesting to see him out. And obviously, looking forward to seeing, you know, what's his name? Josh Taylor. I mean, formidable boxer. And this is his mandatory as well, Mark. So, you know, this is not going to be an easy pushover, this Thai boxer, you know, Kong Xiong. He's going to come to party. He's been calling Josh Kelly out for a long, long time now. So, you know, it's going to be a tasty night, September 26th.
We will be talking about Josh Taylor a little bit later. But before that also, I'd like to touch on a story also that Terence Crawford, his representatives, have reportedly offered Kell Brook around $1.5 million to challenge him for the WBO welterweight world title in November. Now, this is according to sources. It would certainly be an interesting test for Crawford. Charlie, as you know, Brook has been calling for a big fight, probably last chance saloon for Kell Brook. He's not in the Bud Crawford's league, though, is he?
I don't think he is, Mark. He has, whoever he's fought, Kell Brook, he's put on a real, real show, hasn't he? Was it, who was it he fought? Sean Porter, wasn't it? He's done really well, you know. Whenever he's come up against the best of the division, you know, he does try his best and he does mix it with them. But I do agree, Mark, he's been very inactive. It has to be his swan song, right? It really has to be. You know, it's a lot of money, $1.5 million. It's a lot of money. Either win, lose or draw, you know, that's life-changing money for Kell Brook. But he's not in the league of Bud Crawford. He really isn't. He is not in his league.
I couldn't agree more. He still is a big draw, though, Kell Brook. You know, he's been in there with Golovkin. And the American public, Charlie, they do rate him, Kell Brook. Honestly, from the other side of the pond, they think Kell Brook is one of our finest boxers.
Yeah, because he's got heart, Mark. He's got heart, he's got the swagger, you know, and he is slick, you know, but has age caught up with him? I don't know. Like I said, he's been very inactive. The injuries as well, have they played a part? It will be an interesting fight, don't get me wrong, but for me, I think Bud Crawford does win that one.
Overnight, one result to mention, and we are going to talk about Josh Taylor in the super lightweight division. Jose Ramirez retained his WBC and WBO world titles with a close majority decision win over Victor Postel. Now, Bob Arum immediately said afterwards he wants to make the Josh Taylor fight for the undisputed titles later this year, but the WBO still insist that their mandatory is Jack Cattrall. So, Charlie, you know, big, big times now for either Cattrall or Taylor if he can get past this Kong Xiong fight.
Exactly, Mark. I mean, that division is heating up lovely, isn't it? Cattrall, though, he deserves his shot, Mark. He's been waiting in the wings a long, long time. And he's another one who's, you know, a slick customer and he's a tough cookie. So what's his space in terms of that division, you know? But certainly September 26th will give us an indication in terms of where Josh Kelly goes next. Hopefully he comes through that, you know, unscathed. And as we know in boxing, especially recently, there's been real, real 50-50 fights. And without a crowd, you know, the away fighter sometimes takes the advantage. So it's not, you know, it's not plain sailing that Josh Kelly's going to come through this one. But, you know, if he does come through it, then, you know, that division is warming up nicely. Cattrall, who knows, will he get his opportunity? I hope he does, because he's mandatory, like you said, and you never know, it could be an all-British affair further down the road. Boom.
Yeah, he's promoted by, you know, Frank Warren, Josh Taylor has now moved to MTK, hasn't he?
MC Kevitt's top rank as well, wasn't he?
Top rank, yeah. So I was going to say, so Catterall, yeah. On to Frank Warren and Queensbury Promotion. Last night's action in Stratford at London BT Studios. The return of DDD, Daniel Dubois. Let's start with him, Charlie. He looked impressive again. He blew away his late replacement, Snyders, the Dutchman, inside two rounds. He looked like a cruiserweight to me, Snyders. I thought immediately when I saw him enter the ring, I thought he was way too small. I would say that the array of punching that came from Daniel Dubois, you could argue, you know, he was protecting himself for the Joe Joyce fight, certainly with his fists, and they highlighted that last night. There's some cracking body punches. I mean, real venom in those punches. And it goes to show that Dubois has got more in his armoury. I mean, he's a very talented young heavyweight, 22 years of age. I can't see it being too long before he's given a world title shot. He needs to get Joyce out of there. I know you're a big fan of Joe Joyce, Charlie. He needs to get him out of the way. And Fury was in the studio and he was very impressed by Daniel Dubois, as too was I, to be fair.
Yeah, I mean, Snyders was a late replacement, Mark, wasn't he? And he gave away 2 stone. You know, you can't give people like Daniel Dubois 2 stone, you know, weight advantage. You know, you're going to crucify yourself. And that's exactly what happened. First round, like you said, Dubois playing it safe. Don't think he wanted to go up top in terms of punching in case he hurt his fists. That's what the, you know, the pundits were saying afterwards, that, you know, a knock on the knuckles or against the skull, you know, he might break a finger or, you know, sprain a wrist. That would have been, you know, the fight knocked back even further. But, you know, some of the body shots, I do agree, they were phenomenal. They really were. But the geezer was you know, he was a cruiserweight and he couldn't take a body punch. And you could hear it. Like, and every time he connected with the ribcage, you know, Snyders went down. You know, round one, really, it could have been over. He was down 3 times in round one.
Yeah, it was very nearly nearly the end within the first round. He was lucky to get to the second round, Snyders. Now, also on the bill last night, great performance again from Showtime Sonny Edwards. Those pigtails were extremely questionable, though, Charlie. I mean, he obviously did that as a bit of a bet, I think. I think he put it out on social media, who would like to see him in pigtails enter the ring, and I think the vote was something like 58-42%. So I don't think that is going to be a common occurrence from Sonny Edwards, but he certainly did look like a bit of a plonker, didn't he, entering the ring last night.
Sure.
Now, he fought and he was in complete control throughout this fight against Thomas Esamba, who's a 2-time Olympian. Great ring craft again, and dominant performance from Sonny Edwards. He lost only a very, very few rounds. The only thing that worries me from Sonny Edwards, Charlie, is his power. There's a real lack of power. He said after the fight he's got his eyes on IBF world champion Mutari Matanle. But, you know, is he ready? He probably is, but he is lacking power and at the weight for me.
I do agree, Mark. What is he now? It's like his record is he's 16-0 or something like that, isn't he? So I do agree with you. I mean, I don't know if he's working on his strength and conditioning, Mark, but it doesn't, you know, you see a lot of these boxers now there, or whether or not he's slacked off a little bit during COVID-19, but he doesn't look as solid as he, do you know what I mean? He's not, I don't know if he needs to bulk up or work on strength and conditioning or what, but I do agree with you. His little tippy-tappy shots, don't get me wrong, he's slick, he's got real movement, and there's not that many big hitters down at that, you know, is he super fly? There's not many down there. I don't know. Is he ready for world levels? I don't know, but there's not that many world-class boxers out there in those divisions. So is he, isn't he? I don't know. Only he can tell you if he's ready or not.
We'll see, but I think if he does try and go through the rates, the weights, he's really going to struggle with the power. There's a real lack of power there for me. Good battle last night also is Sam Maxwell remained undefeated after a brilliant fight, really, against Joe Hughes, the experienced Joe Hughes. He retained the European belt. And I heard him say after the fight, he's ready for another step up, and called out Ahara Davis. Now, Davis, obviously, he has to get through Tyrone McKenna next in the golden contract, which will be coming up in September. I think Maxwell is improving, Charlie. But for me, he's 31 years of age with 14 bouts. Time is not on his side.
No, I think he was calling out. I don't know if you... It was the other Davis, wasn't it? I thought it was the fellow Scouse. He said there'd be a massive audience. Robbie Davis Jr. I think he wants that fight first because Robbie Davis Jr. is experienced. He's a fellow Scouser. You know, hopefully crowds start returning, if they start returning this side of Christmas. You know, he's saying he would like that fight to take place. And I think that would be a massive ticket seller. That's the only reason he'd want that. You know, a big night in Liverpool. Probably maybe Robbie Davis Jr.'s final fight, because he is, you know, he's getting on in terms of age. He's been in there. He's had a couple of defeats recently. So I think he'll want him first, and then he'll probably look at the big guns in the division. You know, if he comes through that, he's learning every day. Like you said, you know, after the win last night, that was his best fight to date, best performance, because he knew that he was up in the levels in terms of going in with someone like Joe Hughes, who's been in there at European level. Tough competitor. Tough competitor. It wasn't an easy night's work for Sam Maxwell. You know, the early rounds, Mark, very nip and tuck. And Joe Hughes, you know, good little left hook on him. And he was catching him. He grazed the eye, didn't he? You know, there's a bit of damage under Maxwell's eye because he wasn't getting the right hand back quick enough whenever he was throwing it. And Joe Hughes was just literally, he was a schooled performer. He knew what he was doing. He was just going over the top with left hook all the time in the early rounds. And like I said, nip and tuck. Then, you know, Sam Maxwell, second part of the fight, he started coming into his own, and he did start, you know, showing a bit more technique. Very good amateur, you know, with Team GB. Rob McCracken, was the other guy, the commentator, the big fella. He was on Team GB. No, the Brummy lad. He's from West Brom, isn't he? Richie Woodall, he was the commentator. He was saying, you know, he had him under Team GB, and he was a very good amateur. But, you know, he's kind of going through the motions as a professional at the moment. And it's a complete, even Woodall was saying it's two different, you know, levels, an amateur versus a pro. And Maxwell's really struggled as a pro. You know, if you recall, when he took that title, he was lucky, really, wasn't he? He was down on the cards against the Frenchman. The Frenchman was beating him on the cards, and he literally, with the last punch of the fight, he knocks him out, didn't he? So, you know, he's learning his craft every day. Is he ready for a world title? Absolutely not. He should keep with the domestic fighters first. Go through those, you know, those household domestic fighters that have been in with some big names, and then look to step it up. But yeah, I agree. Good win for Maxwell.
Easy night's work also last night for Willie Hutchinson. He now moves to 14-0. He basically wants to move down from light heavyweight to super middleweight. And he said, if any super middleweight in Britain fancies his chances against any of them after his first round KO victory versus Ben Thomas. And Ben Thomas looked from the start, Charlie, look, he didn't want to be there.
No, he didn't, did he? I mean, to be fair, he came in the ring and I thought he came into like heavy metal music. I thought, this guy, he's off his rocker. About 6'3". He looked like he was ready to rumble. But yeah, the minute Hutchinson started hitting him, boy, it was like a Cheshire cat. He didn't want to know, did he?
Just two fights to mention and fighters to watch out for last night on the Queensbury promotion bill. Novices really at professionals, but one lad to watch, Maystone lad Sam Noakes. He moved to 4-0 with four knockouts after impressing against Jordan Ellison. A tough kid, Ellison, but he did get him out of there, Sam Noakes, in the fourth round. And also the impressive David Adelaide, again, the 23-year-old, he broke down the durable Phil Williams, securing a third-round stoppage to go 3-0. Now, Charlie, he called out English champion Fabio Wardley after the fight. I mean, he's only had three professional bouts. I know he's had a very good amateur career, you know, a good young heavyweight prospect and talent, don't get me wrong. We're inundated with British heavyweights. We will be having Frank Smith and part two of the show. A lot of these Queensbury fighters appear to be calling out matchroom fighters, and that's something we'll hopefully be discussing in part two. But it is time for a song, and we're going to leave you with this one, really. This is ahead of Frank Smith's interview. Lady Gaga, Poker Face. We'll catch you in part two.
And after he's been hooked, I'll play the one that's on his heart.
face. Poker face, poker face. I wanna roll with him, a hot pair we will be. A little gambling is fun when you're with me. Russian roulette is not the same without a gun. And baby, when it's love, if it's not rough, it isn't fun. Poker face, poker face. I won't tell you that I love you, kiss or hug you, cause I'm bluffing with my muffin. I'm not lying, I'm just stunning with my love glue gunning. Just like a chick in the casino, take your bank before I pay you out. I promise this, promises. Check this hand, cause I'm mom.
Welcome back to part two of the show, guys. We are joined by local boy Dungood, Matchroom Boxing CEO Frank Smith. Frank, how are you, my friend? Absolute pleasure having you here on the show, and a slightly different weekend for you this weekend.
Yeah, really good. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me. And yeah, it's been a change. We've gone from doing 50 weekends a year of shows to quite a few weekends off work. So it's a bit different. How are you guys?
Yeah, all good, Frank. All good. Thank you for joining us this evening.
No problem at all. No worries.
So the first question I was going to ask, Frank, was, you know, you're the current CEO at Matchroom. I mean, how did it all begin, you know, all those years ago? I heard a little story that, you know, you were a ticket seller and that's how it all evolved. But, you know, for our listeners, can you just give us that background story?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I get a bit of stick from Eddie for this because it seems to be the only story I tell because obviously it's where it started. But I met Eddie when I was 14, selling raffle tickets at a party, pestered him for a job, and started full-time when I was 16 at Matchroom. So I was working in, we used to do a number of different sports, poker, obviously snooker, darts, golf, fishing, everything you can imagine we were involved in. So I started there when I was 16, and then I've sort of worked my way through every role you can imagine. And now in the place I am now within the boxing department. So it's been an exciting, fun journey. And been involved in everything from making cups of teas and coffees all the way to where, like I say, to where I am now.
We've all got to start somewhere, Frank. And all I was going to say, or ask you actually, was did you know anything about the Hearns and Matchroom Boxing before, you know, you say you pestered the Hearns to get that job?
No, I've got to be honest with you. I didn't know. I wasn't a massive sports fan at the time. I was into football. I support West Ham and used to go have a season ticket there, but I wasn't crazy about sports, if I'm being completely honest. And at the party I was at, where I was selling raffle tickets, I'd sold Eddie 20 quid's worth. Someone told me he had a Bentley parked outside, so I went back, called him a tight, geezer. I'm not sure if I'm allowed to swear on this show. I called him tight, and he gave me 50 quid, and that was sort of, I think it just went from there. I didn't really know what he did or what he was involved in. I just realised he's a young guy who's done quite well, so I thought I'll pester him for a job. I'll go and try and work for him.
And I don't know if you realised the plug, but we played Poker Face in between the, you know, getting you on the line, which was where you started out, right? You first started out with poker in the early years. You know, what was that like? And obviously, how not just, you know, snooker, poker, but sports in general has evolved under the Matchroom, you know, banner.
Yeah, no, poker was very interesting. It was a mad world, really, especially at my age. You know, I was literally just, again, running around, getting people teas, coffees. I used to sit in the TV production area and do logging of cards and things like that. So as they come in, you'd log the graphics of the cards, a load of different things. Snooker, obviously involved in still now, and has always been around, you know, has been a huge sport for a long time. Golf, we run the PGA Euro Pro Tour. I used to put out the advertising boards out on the golf course for that. But yeah, I think sports come, you know, obviously it's always been a huge part of people's lives, but I think especially during lockdown and COVID has shown how much it means to people. And we've seen that with the return, you know, especially with football, the numbers of people tuning in. You know, people have missed sport and it's a big part of people's lives.
Yeah, absolutely. And Frank, I was going to ask, when do you think boxing really become more at the forefront for Matchroom, certainly during, you know, your career with the company today? When do you think that was the turning point when boxing really, you know, took off for you?
Yeah, well, I mean, we've always been in boxing, I think, since Barry's first year. I believe, off the top of my head, it was 1987, his first boxing event he promoted with Bruno Bugner. And we've always stayed in boxing while he's done darts, snooker, all the other sports. But, you know, our sort of output reduced. We were doing smaller shows in leisure centres. And then as Eddie moved out of, you know, he started in golf. He used to manage golfers. Then we got in, he was heavily involved in the poker side. And then I think he'd always had a passion for boxing because he'd been involved with it since he was a child, obviously. And then about, I'd say it was probably 11 years ago, roughly. That was when the push really started, and it all started with Audley Harrison coming back for Prizefighter, I'd say, was the big start for us. And then he won Prizefighter, went on to fight David Hay eventually, and that was where Eddie seriously got back involved with it. But we never left boxing, but I think it was sort of on the back burner, and it just ran along, probably doing 10 shows a year. For all those years, and yeah, for the last 10 years, it's been a massive part of our business, if not one of the biggest.
And obviously over the years since you've been working with Matchroom, you know, you've built a bond with Eddie Hearn. I mean, how's that been? And you know, he is a character, you know, some, and social media in general, you know, has really excelled with a no context Eddie Hearn and stuff like that. I mean, what is it like day in, day out working more so with Eddie, because you know you're very close in terms of age and he seems like a real character?
Well, he's actually over 40 now, so I'm only 28, so I've got a few years on him still. But he's great fun, and you know, he's more known for no context than anything else now. But yeah, grown close with him. Obviously, we travel the world, really, you know, together. As I say, 50 shows a year, drive each other mental. But you know, he's a great person to work for, and I've learnt a lot from him, as well as Barry as well. You know, he's taught me a lot of things, and I'm very lucky to be in the position I am. But he's a funny guy. He is like the no context earn 24/7, 24 hours a day, really.
And hopefully he gives you a free copy of his autobiography. I hope he doesn't make you pay for that, that's for sure.
I want a signed copy, to be honest. I'll frame it. I see him enough, so I'll put it in a cupboard somewhere so I don't have to see him even when I get home.
Now, I was just going to also ask, Frank, obviously social media, as Charlie touched on there, has become huge, not just for Matchroom, but for most things and sport, and, you know, influencers and everything else. Now, Matchroom put on a social media event, obviously with KSI and Logan Paul. Has this helped capture a younger audience and also the non-context turn? Is this the way that you guys wanted to go, just to, you know, introduce the next generation to boxing? Because there are other sports that are highly competitive as well. You know, and has it helped in growing your numbers?
Yeah, I think social media is obviously a huge part of our business. It's taken away completely from like traditional advertising spend. You know, we've got across all of our platforms many millions of followers now, between Matchroom's YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, Eddie's following as well. No Context Earn, again, as we mentioned, has been a huge boost as well. As I say, most people don't realise he's a boxing promoter from that, but slowly over time, obviously, they start to understand. So if that brings a new audience to the sport and any sports we're involved in, then it's all for the better. I think KSI Logan Paul, that you mentioned, that came under a lot of stick from the traditional boxing fans, but ultimately it's our job to build the sport. And if that means bringing in, you know, 600,000-800,000 new fans around the world who may not have traditionally been interested in boxing, but they're interested in these two characters, and maybe we retain 100,000 of those as new boxing fans, surely that's good for the sport as a whole and good for the fighters and moving forward to keep growing and developing. We can't just be stuck in sort of a rut and just doing the same thing over and over again, because it's difficult to bring new fans in that way.
And now, Frank, I mean, Matchroom, you know, they've hosted some huge events, you know, the tail end of last year, you know, Saudi Arabia, and more recently, just around the corner from the studio, you know, Matchroom Square Gardens, you know, unbelievable fight camp. You know, how was that experience, you know, weighing up the two, weighing up where Matchroom have been, where they're going, to have it, you know, within, you know, the confines of the mansion, the Brentwood mansion, you know. And I have to admit, I thoroughly enjoyed this series, but, you know, put it into comparison, Saudi Arabia, Brentwood, I mean, what was it like?
Yeah, no, look, we're very lucky to be able to put on events all around the world. You mentioned Saudi Arabia. It was a great show to put on, you know, everything around it. It was such a build-up getting to that point and the work that went into it. You know, we go to Madison Square Gardens, Wembley, the Motor Point in Cardiff, the Forum in LA. You know, all around the world we're doing shows, but to do something in the back garden of the office was especially special. You know, it was because you could never have imagined us doing it, really. Without what has happened, without the, you know, the whole COVID situation, we never would have thought of putting something up in the back garden. But it's ended up being probably one of the biggest pushes we've made and biggest marketing pushes we've made. It's been great for our business. And I think it, again, has brought new fans in. And it was different. It was innovative. And, you know, we've done so much work to get the sport to where it is that we didn't want to lose the momentum we built over all those years. We had to do something different than going to a studio and just, you know, looking like a boring room with no atmosphere. We had to create that. So yeah, that it was brilliant doing it there, and also just being around the corner from home. Although I had to stay in the Holiday Inn on the A12 for about 20 nights within the bubble, which in itself was a great experience.
I mean, I drove past it earlier. It ain't half an ugly looking building on the A12, isn't it? It needs a facelift.
It needs something, doesn't it? But it was good. You know, it was good fun. There was a good spirit in there. We all had a laugh. There was a big group of us. You know, it was about 100 people every week. And you had that lovely sound of the A12 just fizzing by your ear while we were outside eating. So, no, it was something a bit different.
I think you've answered this question, but, I mean, the idea behind Fight Camp, was it to keep boxing at the forefront on our screens, or, you know, to keep boxers active, really, and relevant, do you think, over lockdown?
I think, you know, ultimately we had to find a way to keep boxers active, and we would have done that whether that was in the garden or whether, as I say, was in a studio. The idea of going into the garden was just to do something completely different, you know. Like I say, we could have gone into a studio, but we would have lost that momentum we built over the last 10 years. And we wanted to be the ones to do something different. And, you know, it's easy for me to say it because I was directly involved, but I think when you look at the way other sports have come back, it was probably up there in terms of the production, you know, the quality of the event. Obviously, the fights were brilliant. They gelled, and you know, they all ended up being 50-50 fights. So, you know, it couldn't have gone much better, and I think it did what we wanted it to.
Absolutely. I mean, in the finale, you know, the pay-per-view event, White versus Povetkin, I mean, what was your thoughts on that? You know, it was a bit of a shock, right?
Yeah, complete shock. But, you know, that's heavyweight boxing, and all it takes is that one punch. I saw a lot of people saying, you know, complaining when we were saying the punch came out of nowhere. It wasn't that Povetkin didn't plan to do that. He obviously knew what he was doing. It was more a fact of, you know, at the end of the fourth round, you would have thought that Dillian White was going in there to close the show, you know, after putting Povetkin down twice. But he just pulled this punch out that, again, you couldn't see coming where we were sitting from. Everyone was completely shocked, but that's heavyweight boxing for you. And then Dillian will be back, and he believes he can win next time round. But it just added to the whole drama of what had been created over those 4 weeks.
And obviously, it does look like the rematch clause is obviously in there, and it will take place. But can you give us some insight into any other matchroom, you know, boxing events that you're working on currently? I've read and heard that you're looking at potentially a show in September. And, you know, beyond that, is there anything else that you're looking at towards the year end?
Yeah, so obviously looking at September, Joshua Boazzi's return. Lewis Ritson will come back in October. We're trying to do Usyk against Chisora. You've got the rematch, as you mentioned there, between Dillian White and Alexander Povetkin. You've got Anthony Joshua will return against Kubrat Pulev as well. You know, there's a lot of things. We've got a lot of plans together, but there's a little part of us waiting for the more guidance from the government around live events. You know, our business is heavily focused on having a crowd. So obviously if we can get some kind of numbers into a venue, then we will look to do that. So we are just being cautious and waiting a little bit until we have a bit more clarity around having crowds within a venue.
And obviously, what about, you know, Frank Warren? He's been popping up recently, hasn't he, about crossover fights and this, that and the other. You know, Dillian White, you know, they'll be mad to throw him in again for a rematch. Do you think, or was it just all hype and talk, do you think there'll ever be a crossover between Queensbury and Matchroom?
I think, firstly, the fact he said about the rematch with Dillian White, you know, mad to put him straight back in. It's lucky he doesn't promote Anthony Joshua, if that's the case, because he never would have got his belts back. Do I think there could be a crossover? I think if the fights make sense, and it makes sense for our fighters, our broadcasters, and our partners, then yes, I think it can work. But on the same hand, I do think, yeah, it's very easy for someone who isn't in a position of dominance or you know, in a stronger position within the market to come out and sort of make these demands and say, we should do this, we should do that. You know, for example, Daniel Dubois, he speaks about Daniel Dubois fighting Dillian White. Daniel Dubois is a great fighter. You know, don't take anything away from him. But he's nowhere near on the level of Dillian White in terms of his position within the market. So it's very easy for him to say, we should do this fight, because it makes sense for Frank Warren, it makes sense for Daniel Dubois. Doesn't make sense for Dillian White, who is already doing huge numbers off the back of his own name. So, you know, I do think there's possibilities to put fights on together, but ultimately over the last 10-15 years, all Frank Warren and his team have tried to do is cause problems, you know, be that legal letters, be that complaints about things we're doing, you know, whereas we've just got on with our own business. So I think we ultimately have to look out for our best interests and look out for our fighters and what we're doing as a business. So, you know, we'll wait and see what happens. But there's also no rush with it. We haven't worked together for 10-odd years. So what difference does a couple of months make?
No, very true. And I mean, in terms of the heavyweight division, obviously Tyson Fury versus Wilder, if that does take place this year, if it doesn't, you know, all twists and you know, and roundabouts, all these things could come into play. Would you ever anticipate, you know, Tyson Fury versus Anthony Joshua and a Queensbury promotion versus Matchroom promotion bill? I mean, could that ever take place if that mouth-watering bout took place?
No, I think that's the one fight, you know, Anthony Joshua against Tyson Fury will happen eventually. I think that's that one for next year. But I see other fights taking place between us, but it just, again, it goes back to the point of they have to make sense. Obviously, Anthony Joshua Tyson Fury is the biggest fight out there, you know, globally. So that will happen one way or another, on a date to be confirmed. It will happen, I'm sure.
Well, Frank, all I was going to say is, look, it's been a pleasure having you on the show tonight here at Phoenix 98 FM, and what you've done for the local area and for boxing over Fight Camp was very, very impressive. It was much needed, very refreshing to have boxing back on our TV screens, and for the area as well, I think it was phenomenal. So well done on that, and I do appreciate your time tonight.
Thanks very much, guys. Appreciate you having me on, and I'll speak to you soon.
Yeah, take care, Frank. Thank you very much. Charlie, great story, Matchroom Boxing, and a great story there, Frank Smith, you know, CEO of Matchroom Boxing. Started very, very early in his career. I think he was 16 when he started with Matchroom. He's been there for something like 12 years now. You know, he's come through the ranks. He's Eddie Hearn's right-hand man. He knows what he's doing by the sounds of it. He knows boxing now very, very well. And yeah, just I love it. It's just great to have him on the show.
Yeah, he speaks very well, Mark. You can tell that... you know, he's well versed in everything Matchroom are doing, and you know, he's obviously done everything, like he said, from making the coffees to running the signs on the PGA, on the golf courses, you know, and he's worked his way up. It's refreshing to see, you know, in today's society, especially in the corporate world, where people come in, you know, over the top because you know, because they've had who they know and their education, etc. You know, la di la di la. But for him, he's literally started at the bottom, worked his way up. As you said, he's a local guy. I think he's from Romford. And to have him at the helm, you know, CEO, that's a big title for such a young guy. So obviously, Eddie trusts him. He obviously knows what he's doing. And you know, fair play to him, and fair play to Matchroom. You know, they've obviously, you know, they've created a real monopoly in terms of certainly boxing. You know, Frank Warren's been at the helm for many a year, but certainly this last decade, Matchroom certainly, in my opinion, have taken over. And that's because younger guys, and it's refreshing, different approaches. Like he mentioned, the social media angle. You know, they're opening up, you know, events all over the world where people wouldn't even think of hosting events. You know. Who would ever thought that there'd be an event around the corner here, you know, in Matchroom Square Gardens? You know, that's creative, and clearly, you know, with a younger guy at the helm, those ideas are just, they're bouncing ideas off each other, and you know, that's fantastic.
We didn't touch on the growth really of Matchroom in boxing, because they have you know, reached the US, in the US now. They've reached out to Italy. You know, they're signing boxers from all over the world. Not, you know, Spain, Mexico, everywhere. So more and more shows going on right across the globe. So they have been at the forefront, certainly of British boxing, but they are branching out, and they're doing it spectacularly well.
Yeah, unbelievable, Mark. It's like I said, unbelievable, and long may that continue. Not only just for the UK market, because you know there's a massive fan base, you know, boxing fan base here in the UK. UFC had a little go, didn't they? They had a little go. They were building momentum. But Matchroom have just gone, you know, okay, we'll go global, and we're quieting you guys down a little bit. And that's exactly what's happened. You know, they're making, you know, not just Matchroom, there's other guys out there as well. You know, it's fantastic. Fantastic for boxing in general. You know, you've got Top Rank, Golden Boy. It's, you know, DAZN there, with Matchroom signing up with DAZN. It's only going to get bigger and better. It's fantastic.
Now, we spoke about Daniel Dubois last night. We're going to play this little tune. Just really the emergence of Daniel Dubois. He's still got a long way to go, as Frank touched on there. Teo Cruz, Dynamite. Enjoy this one. We'll catch you very, very soon. I
I came to dance, 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 dance. I hit the floor cause that's my plans, 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 plans. I'm wearing all my favorite brands, 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 brands. Give me some space for both my hands, 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 hands. You, you, cause it goes on and on and on. And it goes on and on. Came to move, 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 move. Get out the way of me and my crew, 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 crew. I'm in the club, so I'm gonna do, 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 do. Just what the folk came here to do, 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 do. Yeah, yeah, cause it goes on and on and on. And it goes on.
Charlie, some interesting bouts to talk about upcoming this week. You know, we've got some very, very good bouts coming up. MTK midweek to talk about.
MTK are back, Marty. Yeah, Wednesday, this coming Wednesday. MTK up in Wakefield, one of the studios up there. Some cracking little domestic fights this week. Dan Aziz, former guest of the show, he's back out. Andre Sterling. You've got Browns versus Bowes for the super lightweight Commonwealth and British title. You've got Harlem Eubank. Yes, Eubank, Harlem Eubank, he's out versus Martin McDonagh. Again, a great little amateur, Martin McDonagh. So that's just some of the names to look out for this Wednesday evening. You'll get it on IFL TV. It's all online on YouTube. So for all you boxing fans that, you know, thinking I've got a couple of weeks to wait for people like Josh Kelly, etc., to be back on BT, well, look no further. Wednesday night, hook up YouTube, IFL TV. You will not be disappointed, because MTK, again, they're really, really going leaps and, you know, going leaps and bounds. They're accelerating at a rapid pace. So do watch out for that one.
A couple of shows next weekend as well to mention, not just in the UK, but in the US first. Jamel Herring's back in action on Saturday, the 5th of September. So next weekend for the WBO World Junior Lightweight Championship. He fights Quiendo. Estimated ring walk will be Sunday, 4 a.m. in the US and in the UK.
In the UK, yeah, Channel 5 again, Mark, free boxing. So for all our listeners, you know, if you're not subscribing to BT or Sky, and you know, you would only hope that a terrestrial channel puts on a bout, we'll look no further. Channel 5 next Saturday, Alex Dinamanji, he's fighting for the European super featherweight title versus Samir Zahani, live on Channel 5. Hennessy Sports, How do you like those apples, guys?
Also, next Sunday, a world title up for grabs for the vacant WBA World Welterweight Championship. Now, this will be Sunday, the 6th of September. You can catch it at 4:30 UK time, estimated ring walk. So have a look on some of the streaming channels. You might get it on Fox. You might get it on BT somewhere. You guessed the versus Ramos, as I said, for the vacant WBA World Welterweight Championship. So, yeah, look out for those bouts coming to you from the US and the UK next weekend.
Absolutely, bro. So much boxing coming back. It's just a shame the crowds aren't in, you know, but like the rhetoric is, you know, early sort of October time will be, hopefully there'll be some kind of fan base in, which is around, you know, October time. That's when Dubois is supposed to face Joe Joyce, around about the end of October. So I think everything is hanging on having an actual crowd back in an arena, Mark. And some of these fights do warrant a crowd, you know, because they are big fights and you need the fan base in there to create that atmosphere. So hopefully, you know, crowds will be allowed back in. But I know the football have pushed it back as well, haven't they, for crowds going back in. So I'm not sure, I'm really not sure if we're going to see a full house this side of Christmas.
Now, just before we start to wrap up the show, really, Tyson Fury, I mean, how did you take his comments last night, not only about Anthony Joshua, you know, claiming that he needs to grow a pair and they need to sit down and get it done legally. But you've also had, obviously, a few comments from Fury regarding the Wilder fight. You know, if there's no crowds, which you just touched on there, does that fight still happen? Yes, it's contracted to happen. Does it happen now? Does Fury look at another opponent? You know, he's not going to want that fight behind closed doors, let's face it.
I don't think anyone does, Mark. It doesn't make business sense. Frank Warren doesn't want it behind closed doors. Top Rank do not want it behind closed doors. A lot of money has been invested in both Fury and Wilder. And it's a money game, isn't it? And, you know, having those two sell tickets worldwide, whether it's in Vegas, there's been talk about, you know, pitching up in Saudi Arabia or somewhere like that. But they need people to subscribe to it. Obviously, buy tickets and pay-per-view will sell, don't get me wrong. But they want bums on seats as well. That's what they want. And somewhere like Vegas, you know, it's only a small arena, but they can charge stupid money for a ticket. And that's what they want. They're business people. That's what they need. Fury wants a fight. Like he said last night, he'll fight anyone. He's been in the gym since February. He's itching to have a fight. That's in his blood. And whether or not it's Wilder, who knows? Then he's saying, you know, well, if it's not Wilder, why can't it be AJ? But again, everything is hanging off whether or not we can have a crowd. It's hanging off the government, the local government, right? Whether it's in the UK, the US, you know, the Middle East, whatever. We have to have a crowd in before they can make these big fights happen. So everything, I think, is just going to remain as is until we get the nod from the government.
No, absolutely. Charlie, it is that time of the week.
Quote of the week. If you go looking for a friend, you're going to find they're very scarce. If you go out to be a friend, you'll find them everywhere.
Wonderful stuff. So we've given you the fights to look out for. Don't forget, get us on all the socials.
You'll get us on Twitter, on The Ropes FM1. You'll get us on Insta, on The Ropes FM. You'll get us on Facebook, on The Ropes. You'll also be able to listen back to the show. We'll upload it on the website. You can download it. Just go to www.phoenixfm.com. And there's no excuses, guys. You know, we're on social media all week, talking boxing. You know, we love a bit of banter as well. You know, DM us, follow us, tell all your friends. We're live each and every Sunday night, 8 p.m, Phoenix 98 FM.
One more fighter to mention, probably the biggest fight of his life, and he achieved it. He came through it. Special mention to Nigel Fitzmaurice. He's on the show. His show runs from 6 to 8 every Sunday night here at Phoenix 98 FM. He fought coronavirus. He won. He was just in the studio here tonight before our show when we presented a trophy to him. Phoenix 98 FM Fighter of the Year, Nigel Fitzmaurice. So Nigel, if you're listening to this one on the way home, well done again, my friend, and we look forward to seeing you next week.
Absolutely, and his show's called Stepping Out with Nigel. You'll get it, like Mark said, 6 till 8 p.m, soul, funk and disco. He is the best in Essex, potentially the best in the UK. He's your man for 70s, 80s, 90s. He plays some banging tunes, and, you know, stepping out, like we said, he has to take it one step at a time, right? He's getting over it, COVID-19 survivor, you know, and wish him well. An absolute champion.
Guys, we're going to leave you with this play-out song now. An absolute classic, Charlie. This takes me back to my youth, probably 25 years ago, by the Nightcrawlers.
35 years ago.
Push the feeling on. As always, guys, thanks for listening here at Phoenix 98 FM on the ropes. Have a knockout week. And remember,
you're always in with a puncher's chance. Have a good week, guys. Love you long time.
On 98 FM and online, this is Phoenix FM. On 98 FM and online, this is Phoenix FM.
Good evening. You're listening to Body Talk here on Phoenix 98 FM with me, Mel Watson. Hope you're having a good and healthy week. And yes, coronavirus is still in the news. So I'm going to be talking a little bit about that and the mask wearing that seems to be becoming the norm now everywhere we go. But first of all, as usual, starting off with our news roundup. And forest bathing, where you spend time in nature, really does work. And it's good to get outside, isn't it? It's a really good thing to do. 2 hours a week in a forest, glade or park will improve.